Welcome, friends, to the Enduring Gifts of Marvin Gaye podcast, brought to you by your 26-year listening veteran, Jessica. Join me as we celebrate these enduring gifts, the songs of Marvin Gaye. In each episode, I will share insights about the music and recount life experiences tied to it. I'm hoping to inspire you to take a first or your 500th first listen to these songs that are truly the enduring gifts of Marvin Gaye.
Okay, I would have to say that the plot has just thickened here as we step into covering the song, Is That Enough? 7 minutes and 48 seconds long. Jeez, I don't know where that fell in play on the vinyls. I wish I had the vinyls to look at, but I would imagine it's the first song, side B, first album. Let's think about the length of these songs, though. So, you know, I don't think that there are like 4 or 5 songs per side on those original vinyls, because this song is 7 minutes and 48 seconds long. You know what I mean? It's pushing it right up there with Right On into, you know, one of the longest songs in Marvin's career at this point. I mean, actually, that could be a statistic to find out. Okay, Gotta Give It Up is the longest because he's done that album right before here. But Gotta Give It Up is kind of this one-off thing, right? Like, that wasn't even tied to any project. That was it was just a standalone song that he had, and he just threw it in. And it was its own side of a vinyl, right? Just for how long that was, like, the only song on that side of the vinyl. So, you know, as far as like a very message telling, a very message full song written by Marvin Gaye, not a dance song, right? Where it's just put it on, let it flow. It's mostly the music, right? As far as we've already discussed Right On. Isn't it 7 minutes? 10 seconds long? Okay, here I have some type of a version here. Right On, 7 minutes something seconds long. So it's definitely not as long as this song. But I would say now, without really having to go much deeper than just now confirming the time on Right On, here we are stepping into the longest content-filled song in Marvin's library catalog to this point. And here's where I just started this out by saying that the plot thickens. It goes to my frustration of the inaccuracy, the incompleteness, the difficulty to access the records, the difficulty to confirm correct information, right? Like that, just for, like I said, the type of detail-oriented work that I produce, shit like that drives me insane that it's not just a very straightforward, easy to get to. There is the number of people that wrote on this song, okay? That's a fact. And for it to be not until the 40th year anniversary disc set of this project is released for this little thickening of the plot to be released, it's very frustrating to me. Down to, I literally did not come across this tidbit of information that I'm about to share with you until last night, because last night, I've just been listening hard to the song. I guess I would say one night this week so far, I was listening to it hard because I was coming up with the graphics for it to make the Song of the Day video for it. Which I, you know, it's like I kind of reversed my process on this
Because that was like the first one where I created the Song of the Day video first, and now I'm recording this episode. But I was listening to the song over and over and over and over again, which is very easy for me to do. It just becomes kind of like a hypnotic was the word that I was thinking of. But it's, you know what I mean? It's just like, well, that's, it isn't, it's just like, it is very specific to this song that this song, I would definitely say, if you ever wanted to go to the planet of Marvin Gaye. Okay. Because haven't I said that several times so far in this series? Like, it's the planet of Marvin Gaye. It's his own. It's just, it's a planet. It's his own. If you ever want to fully immerse yourself onto the planet of Marvin Gaye, this is the experience to take you there. And so when I just now said hypnotic, that was the first kind of just like, oh, I know that word. I know that kind of, you're just, you're dazed, you're glazed, right? Like, you're just, and, but that is the experience to me of being on this song. And it would be just like, I just would have to come to and realize, oh, okay, I've probably, this song has probably just played 30 times in a row now, because it's been the past couple hours. I've just been in my very creative space. You know, I'm just focusing on what does this song look like to me. And I'm dabbling in that creative space. Like, I'm just trying to get the graphic of what this song looks like to me. And I'm just very much on the planet, right? So it's like I'm in its orbit. I'm in its atmosphere, right? And that's just, I'm able to be in that place for hours at a time, and it's not something that I'm keeping track of. So that's all that I mean. It's not hypnotizing you, but it's just, you are in Marvin's orbit in this space. And okay, so I picked up the 40th anniversary double disc release booklet, and I was flipping through, and there's the essay at the front by We Know Who. So that was not needed to, you know, I wasn't trying to piss myself off. So I didn't, you know, I made sure I got to the end of that. And then it goes into the lyrics, each song and its lyrics. And okay, I'm going to explain a little note that I get here at the end of the book, which explained exactly the experience that I had in the previous song, was that I was telling you, well, I'm giving you guys the alternate version of the song, and I'm looking at the lyrics in this book, and I can tell that the lyrics in this book are not the lyrics to the alternate song here. So once you get on this booklet here to the last song, lyrics transcribed from the original released album, content in other versions in this collection will vary from the printed text. Well, okay, that's every. Just need to read sometimes, but this shit is so small and hard to read. So anyway, like, I had gotten there. Then right beneath that, it says all songs written by Marvin Gaye. And that text is actually quite a bit larger than what I just read to you. Then we get into some really small text again underneath that. And so, okay, keep in mind what it's just telling. All songs written by Marvin Gaye. All right, now this album is released in 1978. So we get to the, is this 40 years? I know that I throw out some year numbers to you guys. I'm like, it's the 25th anniversary of Sexual Healing. And that was not the year release anniversary that was from Sexual Healing. I'm really horrible at math. I thought this thing, like, actually had a name to itself. Like, it is the 40th anniversary. No, it's just telling me Marvin Gaye, Hear My Dear Expanded Edition. I thought on here somewhere, though, it was telling me, like, 40-year anniversary. Hear My Dear, da-da-da-da-da, previously. It's not giving me a number, but, and I'm trying to see, when does it say it was released? Okay, in 2007. 30s? Is it 30? It's not 40. I know it's not 40, so I won't say that, but it's just, like, it's the first time that Motown is releasing the session material on this, right? And it's many, many years past the time that it was first released. Hold on, let me see if I can quickly do this. Yes, I can. Let's do a little math, and I need a little machine to do that. So 2007 minus 1978 is when it was released. 29. I don't know. But maybe if they track that some of these songs were being recorded in 77. So 30, right? But telling you, and so when you got this in 78, you know, you did probably on that original LP get the information that all songs were written by Marvin Gaye, and it was left at that. But now 30 years later, this is what I'm just saying, my frustration for how difficult it is to get to accurate information. If you're hearing a jingling, I have a flashlight on my keychain, and so I'm accessing the flashlight right now. All songs written by Marvin Gaye, 1978, Jobet Music, giving you the copyright info there. Then in parentheses, updated information. 30 years later, breaking news, updated information, news release. When did you stop loving me? When did I stop loving you? And is that enough? Written by Marvin Gaye and Anna Gaye. Now, that is some type of tea right there, because that takes the context of this song to a different vantage point, processing point for the listener. Song is 7 minutes 48 seconds long. You need to give that a good whirl, one solid time. And gosh, is it your first time ever listening to that song? Because welcome to the planet of Marvin Gaye in 4 seconds. Okay? In 4 seconds, you are understanding, you are taking a trip to the planet of Marvin Gaye. Who starts a song the way the first 4 seconds of this song start? It is conveying everything that you are strapping in to continue receiving for the next 7 minutes and 44 seconds. It's dark. It is impossible for me to see light in this song. It's dark. And it is space. And then after 4 seconds, music does start to come in. And it is very, the last episode, this was Marvin's language. I threw in some lyrics from another Marvin Gaye song where he says a Buddhist monk, right? And so just whatever continent, right? Like whatever continent that covers, it's Asia. But it's, you know, it's just, it's a spot on the planet. And there's just a certain sound of music that you kind of would correlate to that area. And then the first music, the first instrumentation that you start to hear in this song, it very much exudes that side of the world to me. It's just, it's a different continent that Marvin is giving us the sound of once we start to get instruments on this song. Gosh, how do I say this? It's I can say it coming from what would kind of have to be the perspective of Anna Gaye, given the fact that one night this week, prior to tonight, January 25th, 2020, that for the very first time in 26 years, because I am experiencing this album in my first year of study of Marvin Gaye music, and for the first time in 26 years to come across the fact that supposedly, and that's why I hate these little booklets of these re-releases. They're so sloppily put together, in my opinion. You've always got this bullshit essay that, please don't read that before you start listening to the music. Then, you know, you get some supposed lyrics to songs, right?
then you'll get some kind of,
like, that's why I'm saying, why does it need to be updated information 30 years later that Anna Gay co-wrote the most telling song on the album of the experience start to finish between her and Marvin Gaye? It is not covering the last years of their relationship, like the bullshit that's going on between them during the divorce stage of the relationship. We get that tea. When did you stop loving me? When did I stop loving you? There is a song on this album that is the most describing the intricacies of this relationship from start to finish between Marvin and Anna, and 30 years it takes for us to get an updated information in the smallest font possible that I only stumbled across it because I don't know why I opened this book and got to this page. I don't know how I came across this information. I needed to get it to record this episode, I guess. But, yeah. That, it changes the context of what we are hearing in this song to get some type of a supposed update that Anna is writing on this as well. Now, it makes me beg to ask this question. Is it an example of a song that we had, like, just to keep you satisfied, where in 73, when that version of the song is released, we look at the writing credits on that and it's Marvin and Anna. But I had to give you the context of that to explain that that song had actually morphed and had originally been written by Marvin and Anna during the What's Going On phase of music writing. It's touched by several different artists, different versions of the song is kind of getting just morphed. It changes and changes and changes until we land at those final lyrics that are on that album. And I say to you, I'm like, Anna wrote on this version that we finally got. It makes me question now if that actually is the case, that she was writing on the actual final version of the song that we get on the Let's Get It On album versus, yes, she started writing on it years back when they first developed it, but maybe she stayed a part of the process up until what we get on Let's Get It On. It just seems that Marvin and Anna seem to have this ability to be writing together through, like, some of the lowest points of their relationship together, writing about the context of their relationship together. And that is extraordinary. That is, who has a relationship that is that authentic? Do you know what I mean? Whoa, right? Like, me and you are going through the most, and let's sit down and write a song about it. Let's write a song about the shit that we're going through right now. I mean, who does that? Who does that? And so there is this perspective that I'm able to offer now, given that context, that fact, that tidbit, that co-writing, just the two of them too. It wasn't Marvin Gaye, Anna Gaye, David Ritz wrote the song. Because he's in the picture, you know, during this far back, right? I'll explain that. I haven't really explained this correctly enough to you guys. But so I get this information actually from the Marvin Gaye Collection book. I've given you an episode on a ballad song that Marvin recorded, remained unreleased until a version of it is included only on the Marvin Gaye collection. There are multiple versions of the songs that Marvin was working on. The Bobby Scott songs, right? So that starts in the late 60s when those two get connected, that Marvin gets the material. And over years, a decade, he just keeps recording and recording these songs. And I tell you guys that there is an album that was released after Marvin's death by CBS Records, or whatever name they go by, right? Like all of these company names. But they release a package called Vulnerable. And I tell you guys, get on my YouTube channel, Marvin Gaye's Enduring Gifts. I actually have a playlist that is called the Marvin Gaye Collection, and in that I have just dumped everything that I've given to you from the Marvin Gaye Collection. There are 4 discs in the collection, so it is a variety of music. But among that playlist of songs are these ballad songs that Marvin is working on for years and years, a decade. And the specific versions of them that we get on the Marvin Gaye collection are not what you're hearing on the Vulnerable release. And so at some point since doing this podcast, I read a note in this book explaining what was going on with that. And I'm looking at a place where I thought it was right here. Anyway, good gosh, I don't really want to have to... Okay, here we go. I was like, I don't really want to have to read through this fucking book because it's written by this clown, but I just easily came to a little paragraph here. Hold on. I'm going to read it so that I can paraphrase it to you, and then I will be able to explain what I'm talking about here. So 1 second. Okay, so around the time that Ritz connects with Marvin Gaye, he says it was shortly after he meets Marvin that Marvin gave him a tape of 7 songs. And Marvin is just explaining, like, it's his, you know, like, triumph in music, right? Like, it's just his best work that he's ever done. But he just keeps it, like, confined to this cassette. And supposedly, he records these songs during the time that he's making Hear My Dear. It's in 78. And he just recorded them all at once. It, like, flooded out of him all at once. Now, mind you, though, this is what he's been recording and re-recording for years. So, to explain that, there's versions of these songs, gosh, where do I hear them sometimes? Okay, so to clarify, it's that in 1985, CBS, after Marvin dies, they release the Romantically Yours disc. So that's a disc as well. There are a couple of these ballad songs on there. But those are his versions from the early 60s. Now, I've told you somewhere, I don't know that I've told you guys on this podcast, I've recorded it for one of my YouTube videos. It's been since these months of doing this podcast, I have come across these Motown unreleased collections, and that is literally what they're called. If you go into any of your music platforms, streaming platforms, and you just do a search on Motown unreleased, well, boom, 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 you start to get these results, and it's by year. So every year, Motown unreleased in the 60s, right? And I feel like, oh, okay, so most of the time, those collections are complete conglomerations of Motown artists. So Motown unreleased 1964. And you're going to get on that, and it's just all kinds of songs from all of the different artists. Not all of them, but just, you know, the bulk of the different artists on the Motown roster. And it's unreleased songs from that year. They do dedicate a Motown unreleased Marvin Gaye 1965, and I came across that many years back. That was magic to come across so many years into the game. And lo and behold, I'm hearing these exact songs again, a 1965 version of them. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm like, Marvin, he literally is. He's recording these songs for decades. Okay, then I will say this has just been, I haven't been in study of this. I have just been exposed to this. So I have audibly heard this, and immediately though, I am able to perceive a different depth and a different delivery that is coming from Marvin. But it is on the Motown unreleased 1967 conglomeration disc. It's Marvin, it's everybody else. And I'm hearing these songs recorded again in 1967 by Marvin, but they are beautiful. They parallel the stuff we get in 78 that you only hear on the Marvin Gaye collection. And I've given it all to you guys. You have access to all of the stuff that I tell you. You can only hear it on the Marvin Gaye collection. You can only hear it on my YouTube channel, okay? You have access to it. It's for free. Please listen to all of those songs. And my, you know, graphic for the songs will tell you it is from the Marvin Gaye collection. It's disc four. It's the Balladeer. So you can hear all of these songs that I'm referring to. But there is this Motown unreleased 1967, not every single one of them, but several of these songs again that Marvin is singing again. And it's just, it's in a different way. Actually, every single song that Marvin has on this Motown unreleased 1967, he's in an energy. He's in a place. He's a little down. It's a little melancholy. His delivery of everything is just a little melancholy, but it is very deep. It's very touching. It's very, gosh, what was going on with him in 67? Other than I kind of could understand that could be the time frame that he is referring to when he says Smokey Robinson came in and saved his life. I would say that probably by 67 in Marvin's career, he's kind of just feeling maybe like he's drowning a little bit in the Motown machine. You know what I mean? There are so many different artists already on the roster that are always getting released and they're always on the radio. But when you get to these unreleased collections year by year by year like that, you're actually seeing that there were a lot of artists that Motown must have been kind of working with and entertaining, signing them and doing projects with them, but they were like already known artists. They've got Billy Eckstine, that he has songs on these unreleased years where it's like, did Motown do an album with Billy Eckstine? I don't know. Maybe they did release something with him that actually did get released, but then they have all of these unreleased things. Or maybe, you know, they were entertaining something to do with him and it just didn't come through. There's also a song that I have on my channel. It's called I thank God for my wonderful life. And this is hilarious that it's hitting me like this, because that was as much as Marvin could recall of it. Marvin speaks about that song in this 1976 interview with Paul Gambaccini. Paul says to him, so it seems like, yeah, you are like a really prolific songwriter, because, you know, I've heard that you, you know, were like commissioned to write songs for other artists. He's like, Sammy Davis Jr. Is it true? Like you were going to write an album for Sammy Davis Jr.? And this guy asks Marvin that, and Marvin says to him, he's like, where in the world do you get your information from? He's like, how do you know that? And so he was like, yes, there was a time when Sammy Davis Jr. was going to come and make a record with Motown. And, you know, I asked if I could, you know, produce and write a couple of songs for him. And he was like, and so I did one, and he's like, and it would have been great. And I really wrote it for him, where I just gave it the sound that it would have sounded great coming from him. And he's like, oh, what is it called? He's like, Marvin couldn't even really remember what he had titled it, but he started to sing a little bit of it. And when he did that in that interview, I was like, oh, Marvin, that is your song that I love, and it's so beautiful and it's so sweet. And I believe that that song comes out on the 1985 Romantically Yours, or the, oh, what did they call it? Was it Masochistic Beauty or Dream of a Lifetime? Dream of a Lifetime. And that was the name of the album, also was Dream of a Lifetime. Masochistic Beauty is on that album. That album is also released after Marvin Gaye dies by CBS. And this name of the song is Dream of a Lifetime.
But Marvin wrote that for Sammy Davis Jr. originally back in these years, in these Motown unreleased days. But that was just an example of like how he would kind of feel like he's kind of drowning a little bit. So let's just get real, right? Like, let's say I said this in the previous episode and I made myself laugh because it was like all this competition atmosphere over at Motown, right? And yes, Berry Gordy's doing that on purpose and he's hoping to just like light a fire under everybody's ass to do their best work and just always be having to work. You know, you can't rest on your laurels, and just because your last hit doesn't guarantee your next hit. And you know what I mean? Like, you always just got to be putting in the work, putting in the work. But then I said, yeah, but some people could have an unfair advantage because they could sleep with somebody.
And that's kind of their in.
Well, okay. Like I said, let's just keep it real. We're just keeping it real here, right? Say that had been an approach or a thought that people thought that Marvin had taken by marrying Anna, right? And I think, let's just speak to that fact. Let's not speak to that as a motivation for Marvin's relationship with Anna, but let's speak to that fact. I think that in many ways it did show itself and it did advantage itself from Marvin, but I think that just in as many ways it did not advantage itself for Marvin as much as maybe you would fucking just expect that it could. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think it was a fact, right? And like I said, I think we have very much established that this relationship with Marvin and Anna was really real. But there were just also some facts about it, right? And so one of the facts is that now Marvin literally is a member of the family, right? By marriage, he's literally a member of the Berry Gordy, the Gordy family. And I know that very appreciated by Marvin is the relationship that he was able to have with Anna's father. Like, Anna's father was very much a positive father figure to Marvin, and he really loved Anna's father and, you know, appreciated the positive influence that her father was able to have on him. But yeah, it's like all of a sudden, just kind of by facts, Marvin is now a member of the family, and kind of therefore, just that being a fact, you would kind of expect that there are some benefits to that. And like I say, I think that played itself out kind of 50-50. Let's speak to some of those facts about that. Marvin states, so how I told you, where did I come across this, that, you know, it was being explained that there were some artist-producer relationships that kind of almost became exclusive, and it was like, but that producing team was obviously knocking out the hits, like number one, number one, number one hits, but they're kind of exclusively connected to this artist group. So that was happening with the Supremes, the Temptations, right? Like, those musicians are cutting songs that are coming from certain producers, and those are charting high, high, high. They kind of consistently always get to get the next new song from that producer group, right? So that's a way that Marvin is kind of excluded sometimes, though. It's like he doesn't always get the opportunity to have the hottest new songs from the hottest producers come in his way. And that's an example of like, okay, but I'm a part of the family. You know, there should be some advantage coming my way, but, you know, just for that, just because I am part of this family, it isn't necessarily getting me access to the best songs coming out of this shit. You know what I mean? So, you know, it's like, on the one hand, it isn't working for him, but here's another way that I think definitely on the other that it did. So this is really what I mean by what I said last episode too, that it was really kind of just Marvin Gaye among a lot of other people. I say that. Let that be controversial, and it's coming from me. That's my opinion. But is a fact, because Marvin Gaye, no matter kind of what time frame you're looking at him, was always Marvin Gaye. Do you know what I'm saying? He was always Marvin Gaye. I tell you about this episode that Berry Gordy is doing on some little teen TV, like a weekly little Fans of America are in the audience. And what this show does every week is it goes into the record company offices. And it's just, it's like doing a documentary, just a day in the life inside of these record companies, just following the artists and everybody making the music around. So this episode, they've done that for Motown. And so we're seeing this black and white still footage, no sound to it, of this camera crew came down to the Motown headquarters and they were following all of the different artists around, watching them record songs and shit. And Berry Gordy is there real time, and he's kind of just narrating, like, oh, this is who you're seeing, the Supremes right now, you're seeing, you know, Smokey Robinson, whatever, whatever. Well, then, kind of towards the end of this episode, you know, Barry says that he just also needs to shout out the unsung heroes that are not able to be here today, because, you know, then in between these little shots, the actual Motown artists are there too, and they're performing live on this little show. So they had Stevie Wonder, you know, they've got the different acts there doing their songs of the day too. And so at the end of the episode, that's when Barry says that he needs to shout out the unsung heroes, like the people both that were not there performing that day, and that maybe you didn't catch some footage of them in the stills that we've been looking at. Or not the stills, but, you know, just the narrated clips that we've been looking at. And so kind of right away, who he's shouting out, he's like, for instance, Marvin Gaye. And Barry says this, and this is a fact. He's like, Marvin Gaye is our most consistent. And like I told you, this isn't yet 68, because Marvin has not released I Heard It Through the Grapevine yet. So it's not that far into the time frame of Motown, of Marvin's career, of what we're talking about here. So it's even earlier than that, but even earlier than that, Barry is saying Marvin Gaye is our most consistent charting artist, period. That's, look at all of the musicians that are on that roster. Legends, million copy sellers, number one hits, Hall of Famers, stars on, you know what I'm saying? To this day, worldwide recognition. But what did I just tell you? And that is not just coming from me, because you could hear me saying some shit like that. But we're talking about fact. It's a fact. So among all of that shit, the most consistent is Marvin Gaye. Okay? I told you guys in the last episode, and it's a different thing that we're dealing with here. It's not just, oh, and by the way, I just happen to be like completely obsessed with my man for 26 years. It's, you know what I'm saying? For me, and then now let's continue. And you might not feel, you're like, Jessica, are we talking about a song? Yes, we're talking about Is That Enough? Because it helps me to prove my point. Like, when I can give you facts like that, and I didn't even have to, like, dig hard, and maybe it's, like, fake facts. You know, it's not a fake fact. That was real time coming from the president, creator of that company at the time, saying that. Let's fast forward. If I always kind of use the threshold, oh, it wasn't I Heard It Through the Grapevine time yet, but let's speak about I Heard It Through the Grapevine time. And keep it up to yet, you know, like to today. The statistic and the fact on that is that, and I didn't know this until I started doing this podcast. I don't give a fuck about this. I don't need to know this to know anything more about Marvin Gaye. But here's something else that is a fact, maybe for anybody else that needs to know something more about Marvin Gaye. Like, if you're a factual needing person, here's another fact feather for your cap there. So then, I Heard It Through the Grapevine is the highest selling song in Motown's history, period, to today. And the version of it, because there were a couple released, but it's the Marvin Gaye version. Okay, so again, let's put into the context all of those people at Motown, all of them. We even have these every single year unreleased tracks, compilations, people, I guess, that we didn't even ever know were associated with Motown. Billy Eckstein, Sammy Davis Jr. Sammy doesn't have any songs on these unreleased things, but he was in talks, right? Like, just people. successful people. Marvin Gaye. And all of that. Think of all of it. The number one highest selling song of all of that shit is from our man. It is a different thing that we are talking about. And it's and those are facts. It's a fact because of how just much I know it for myself. You know what I'm saying? Like, I more go by, and I've always said this, I started out this podcast series about this, but I am the person where, okay, so I said in the last episode too, Led Zeppelin, dove deep into Led Zeppelin. I'm gonna tell you how that happened. It was years back. It was the time I had cable. And it was one of those times, it's like when you have cable sometimes and you just have like the full cable package, you have 900 channels of content. And do you not find yourself with 900 channels of content? You're going through, you're flipping through 900 channels of content and you can't find fucking anything to watch. So there was this one weekend I'm doing that. I'm just going through my channels. I can't find anything that I want to watch. And as I keep going through the music channels, because I had a series of music channels, I kept scrolling through this Led Zeppelin live concert from the late 60s. They were in the Royal Albert, King Albert Hall or whatever. So it was this very kind of early on concert with them, live concert. And I would see it, and I had never, ever heard a Led Zeppelin song, but I had heard for all of time, you know, oh, how iconic they are, whatever. Just because of that. If you tell me something like that right off the bat, now I'm not going to listen to it just because you told me that. Because I will be the judge. So I, you know, they're saying that it's Led Zeppelin. I can see it in the information as I'm flowing through. So I keep scrolling past it. But fuck, sometimes I just land on it and I listen for a second or two and I'm like. And so, okay, yeah, I'm going to skip because I'm not going to listen to that because everybody says they're like the greatest of all time. So I'm going to keep because I have to decide that for myself. But then one time I did that, I got caught up and I was just listening for a couple seconds and I heard the lyrics that fool said. And this was like back in 1968. And I was like, what? Oh, wait a minute. And so then I got caught up. And from there, I sat there and I watched the rest of that concert. But this was very towards the end of whatever this little thing was. Because it wasn't only that concert. It was like a whole documentary on them. But they were repeating that like over and over and over again on that channel. So then I sat there and I watched it until the end. But now I needed to see it from the beginning until I got to that point where I started watching it. So that was it. That started my journey on Zeppelin. And yes, I can confirm. You know what I'm saying? But I needed to do that. I needed to confirm that for myself. I will never take everybody's word for something. And I don't give a fuck how iconic the status has been that those people have reached. If I agree, then I agree. If I don't, then I don't. So for me, when it comes to Marvin Gaye, I don't need facts like that. I don't need to know that Marvin Gaye was the most consistent charting artist in Motown during those days. And I don't need to give a fuck that I Heard It Through the Grapevine is the highest selling song that's come out of their entire catalog. I don't give a fuck about that to know that Marvin Gaye is the baddest motherfucker that there ever was. That is. So all of this background and this intensity and this you knowing that this flows through me for Marvin takes me back to now we can start to have this discussion about going to the planet of Marvin Gaye, okay, in this song. And we are transported there in the first 4 seconds of the song, okay? In the first 4 seconds of the song, strap the fuck in because this is Marvin. Now, the way that I have been studying the song since my last episode and knowing that we were covering this next is this is Marvin. And let's not hesitate to understand that this is Marvin, but there is an interesting new context to the song because it's also Anna. And it is going to allow me to say what I'm going to say, and I'm just going to be saying it from what would have to be the perspective of Anna Gaye, simply because she co-wrote this song, supposedly. Now, mind you, this is what I'm saying. Like, this is morphing my mind to just be like, damn.
Is this a song that they had started to create together years prior and it sat on the shelf and then Marvin picks it back up to finish it for this project? But I know. I can tell you the answer to that is no. Because this song is most definitely a capturing of Marvin Gaye on this planet in 1977 through 8 when he's recording this project. Okay. This is 100% where our man has graduated, evolved to in his artistry, in his creation powers. That is the reason why, with full confidence, I can say to you that we are on the planet of Marvin Gaye, because this is the best submersive experience into the creation powers and abilities of Marvin Gaye, of artistry, musical artistry. There's a visual artistry. There's paintings. You can go to museums in European countries and they are the best of all time, right? These are the most prolific visual examples of artistry. Okay. This song right here is one of the most prolific and demonstrative, educational, experience, submersive experiences into some hardcore Marvin Gaye groove. Marvin Gaye planet, Marvin Gaye atmosphere, Marvin Gaye orbit, just Marvin Gaye experience, the creation of Marvin Gaye. This came from somebody's mind. This originated inside of somebody and they were able to take it outside of the inside of themselves. And until today, we can listen to this shit. And it is every single thing. This is what I'm talking about, okay? I mean, let me definitely guarantee you something. Play this for somebody and they don't have all this experience that I've been telling you. Do you really want to rock with them? Because there's just always that. You know what I'm saying? Woo! I mean, in this life, right, there's got to be like-mindedness. There's got to be wavelengths and the Martin, you know, we're here. And right now, I'm my eyes to your eyes through fingers. You got to be, I mean, if somebody doesn't get it, do you really want to rock with them? Because don't worry. Like, there are those that won't. Do you need to rock with them? Okay. If somebody gets it, you need to. So,
okay. I have to keep it real. This is going to be a very keep it real, basic man and woman relationships discussion. So let's just go to that. Let's go to man and woman relationships. And you know what, guys? In the spirit of not excluding anybody, you know what I'm saying? I don't know what your situation is, so definitely you don't have to be excluded. But let's just talk about those types of relationships where there is just these dynamics between you and the other party, right? And but so from my experience in life, it's been man-woman relationships. That's all that I mean when I confine it to that context, is that that's what I can speak to. But oh my gosh, so in these man and woman relationships, there are these ones, right? Like there are these ones. And I hope you've had one. Now, there is evolution from it, there is recovery from it, there is healing from it, there is the lessons to learn from not always seeking out this type of dynamic. Let's keep that very real, okay? That is definitely kind of, and okay,
I used the term, I was like, the red thread. And then I Googled, I was like, what does red thread mean? Because I know I've heard that before. And I know what I meant when I was saying it. But when I looked up red thread, it was talking about like soulmates. And like, no, I just mean like in a tapestry. If the tapestry was all black and there was just a red thread through it, it's like a central theme, right? It's like a you can see it. It's like just going throughout. That's what I meant when I said the red thread. But like, so another red thread that I have just kind of had throughout this series is just offering that little bit of a higher elevation, healing, recovery, train of thought, lesson, learning. Let's try and focus on that when moving forward out of certain things so that we can stop unhealthy patterns and experiences being our only reality, right? Like, let's try and heal some of the ingrained things that continue to draw those type of experiences to us. Okay, yeah, fine and dandy. But at the same time, you can have had some of those things, right? And they do kind of, no matter what, stand out. And they kind of set a standard that kind of, no matter what you do, kind of seek to emulate. So, okay, what I'm meaning by this, and I'm just going to stick very specifically to the context of this song, because what I mean by that is very much in the context of man-woman relationships, where some, and I, okay, like I just said, there are kinds of those, and there can be very few, where there was a dynamic where if you are a strong-willed woman, right, but you had a man that was, you didn't rule him, you didn't run him, right? So an example, just a personal example, and this is all that I will, you know, get into as far as personally goes, but it will explain. So years and 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 years, I was knowing that person that I have referenced, right? And at a certain many year and years to where me and him are not even like that. Me and him had a very long time of knowing each other too, where we were not even like that anymore. So I started to regard him kind of as just like somebody that knew me for years and years and years that I could just bounce things off of. You know what I mean? Like, he was just a guy friend that knew me in and out and I could just bounce things off of. So I, you know, and I was single and he was not anymore, but I could just, it's, and so because he was not single too, it was just kind of like he was this neutral, but just somebody that had known me for forever. And, you know, therefore I could just tell him everything, right? And so we're talking one time and I was like, dude, hook it up. You know what I mean? I was like, I've seen some of your friends, you know what I mean? They're hot. Like, and I know that some of them are singles, like, hook it up. And he was like, no, he was like, what did he say to me? Because I had it in my mind a couple seconds ago when I started to say this. He was like, no, I can't hook you up with any of my friends. He was like, you would walk all over them. You would, you know, no, they can't handle you. So, and when he said that, I was like, oh, okay. You know what I mean? Because, okay, you know what I'm saying? That could be totally true. And that is not going to work for me either. So, so you know what I'm saying? Like, there are relationships and there are certain ones where you did not run all over that person as the woman to that man. That is the very specific context that I am speaking of, okay? And so, like I said, not to exclude anybody, we could just say the more, I don't even necessarily need to necessarily say the more dominant one, but just maybe like we're matched in dominance. You don't run me? Please believe, you know you don't run me, okay? Does that mean, I know that makes sense about what you guys listen to me say, right? But at the same time, damn for myself, if I have to understand that at many significant times it is revealed to me that I also do not run this motherfucker either, right? Like, I'm not running him, okay? He, and if he doesn't just very much have to make me understand that sometimes, right? Like, we're having that type of a relationship. So there is definitely no running all over somebody dynamic that goes on in this shit right here. And sometimes that's gonna last for a very long time. But also, you know, okay, let's just go back to that higher level thing. Like, sometimes there's like recovery that needs to happen from stepping out of something like that. There's healing from something. This is what I would say that needs to heal. You know, like, let's heal maybe a dynamic seek of somebody that, like, needs to very blatantly assert or dominate themselves over you. Because that's not usually in the most polite way. These are not usually the most positive experiences when you get the breakdown, you get the memo, you get the understanding that you don't run over that other person, right? Maybe you receive that information in a very hurtful way, in a very, whoa, this is like almost like a deal breaking type of a way. And I'm not talking about any type of a physical abuse type of situation. I have never had that type of an experience with a man in any of my personal love relationships. I've never had that dynamic. But there can just be other ways that guys can, or, you know, the other party can dominate themselves in the situation. And it's not usually in a positive way. I'm not talking about like healthy dynamics. I'm talking about like in ways where it's like, fuck, dude. You know what I mean? And let's maybe heal us seeking that out, because that's not healthy for us as the recipient from time to time to have to get that understanding that you don't run over this other person. That's not necessarily being demonstrated in the healthiest dynamic type of ways, right? And so, unfortunately, though, when we don't have a health in that dynamic seek yet, right? Like, we seek the dynamic. There's kind of even a turn on by it sometimes, right? There's an, ooh, poppy, okay. You know what I mean? Like, and but at what expense to yourself, right? Like, what expense did you just really have to get this demonstration from that other person that they very much will assert their own way in certain situations? But gosh, hand in hand with that, when we're looking at what it is they're having to do that, it's not respectful towards us 9 times out of 10. You know what I'm saying? It's not considerate. It's not healthy. It's not making a healthy, loving, respectful relationship dynamic either. Okay. This is what I'm talking about. So, and very much though, now when I'm going to start getting into these lyrics with you guys, so there's that, there's just all of that, and very much, that person had all of his ability to, make me very aware that I did not run all over him. And down to many years outside of that type of a dynamic between us, you know what I'm saying? Like, how much he knew who I was as well. No, he's not trying to hook me up with any of his boys because, you know, I would run all over them. So, you know, I mean, it's just like, fuck, dude. Okay. So let's see her. Because this song, like, guys, I don't even know if I can handle trying to listen to portions of this song and then come back to you and tell you what I just listened to, because this episode would be like 500 hours long. But I almost feel like let's make this award-winning with the passion that I will
come back to you with if I do actually do it like that. This song, oh my gosh, dude. But, and just like understand its context to me. This song has been all of this to me for 26 fucking years. Well, I please believe me and understand that this did not escape me. The very first fucking time that I ever heard this song at 14 years old, okay? That created this dynamic with me and Marvin, where I was in complete grasp of the knowledge that this man is the baddest motherfucker that there ever is. Ooh, it just got elevated to that. The baddest motherfucker that there ever is. And there is not a time that I listened to this song. It just gave me chills because like those first 4 seconds of that song go up your spine. And you were just like, this is such a creation of experience. It's okay. You don't experience. This is Marvin's experience. Marvin is dominating you for 7 minutes and 48 seconds with his experience. Okay. This explains the dynamic of what was going on in Marvin and Anna's situation from start to finish. I have told you that. It's like, I met a little girl, and that's very much the early years, right? That's, you're so sweet to me, I don't think I'll ever roam. I was always all alone. We're learning Marvin's history up until the time that he meets Anna. He meets Anna at a very young, early age. Once you really loved me, once I really loved you, 1964, they get married. You know, it's beautiful. She's not telling him things that are crossing her boundaries. Those things have to show up eventually. So that's like the early years, the early, early years. And then we just get into the very end of that song where he's saying, hallelujah, he's free. And you're like, damn, really? Ouch. Okay, then we get into when did you stop loving me? When did I stop loving you? We're very much past that early time. We're into the bullshit that has been going on, mama, that has gotten us to this place. And actually the shit that's going on as we're at this place, right? You're turning me into the police. You fucking need $1 million to leave. You know, you will remember me for the rest of your life. And evidently, you know what I'm saying? We got to wait 30 years to find out she co-wrote that song too. And that is another prime example. Marvin didn't have that song on the shelf. Okay. They didn't start to write this shit in 71. And then, you know, she stepped off of it and he comes back around to it and puts it out. It's like, no, okay. They are writing these things together. Okay. No. Did you caught my reaction in the song where I was like, oh, fuck no. You need to make up your fucking mind. And you ain't just going to be going back and forth like this with me. Well, evidently, Anna co-wrote that shit with him. Okay, so we've gotten the dynamics of their relationship, but it was a very much, like I said, Marvin's perspective. I said, we got very small glimpses of what Anna's trespasses were, right? He was letting us know what he perceived her trespasses to be. And we got very small glimpses of what Marvin understood to be the things that were deal breakers for Anna as well, right? We got that small glimpse of that shit where it's like, everything that he thought he was doing that was pleasing her and all these heartaches that she hid and never told him about. Okay, so we're getting like a good understanding of their relationship, but this is like this, Anna. It's like, Anna, I am so unable to listen to your man on this song without being like so turned on at how your man lets me understand that he's not really the one. You know what I'm saying? He's not really the one. You know what I mean? And he doesn't necessarily run it. He's not necessarily... I am 100% getting an impression that in your situation with Poppy, you know what I mean? I think you handle your whole side of the thing too. And we understand that. I think that's what Marvin is not ever trying to give us an impression of Anna, that he ran all over her. And see that, that's when these things just become so, we need to work on not being so turned on by this stuff, people, in our own personal lives. It's like, sometimes you need to work on what, don't seek that out. Like, why do you need to seek out like a, you know what I mean? But you know, it's just, you are fully in understanding of the other types of situations that won't work. This is when my homeboy is telling me, no, he can't hook me up with any of his friends. And I just right away I let it go, because I when he explained to me the reason why not, I'm like, okay, fuck, well, because you know, I am who I am. And you know, if it only can take somebody like you, well, then if you're letting me know that's not who's in your group, then you know, then that doesn't work for me. And we just, sometimes it's like, maybe this goes back to the moral of my story. Maybe it's the story of you anyway. Maybe you're not ever going to really stop. being turned on when you can see your man just demonstrating to you that he is a fucking man, dude. And gosh, it sometimes is toward your detriment. So you need to heal. Let's don't lose the lesson. You need to heal what it is that attracts you about that. But fuck if it might not just be the story of you anyway. And so maybe as good as it gets is you realize it's what it does to you, and you just need to maybe not seek it out to have it real time in your life. Okay, so let's go into these lyrics now. Okay, this is enough of the getting you geared up to experience this experience very immediately. I've already made the video for this song, and it's going to be going up very immediately because, okay, so here's what happened. Like, this month, I cut back on bills and I got rid of my premium subscription to Spotify. Okay, so I just now have the free access thing. What I see is on that is I am able to listen to a full one of my podcast episodes or the other podcasts that I listen to without interruption. They don't fuck with my podcast listening ability. But I go into Spotify on a free version of it and I type in "Hear My Dear" and it gives me a result for it, but it will only let me listen to it on shuffle play. And in a free version of Spotify, it limits your skips. So I can't just go straight to this song and listen to it in Spotify. Oh, no, that does not. No, you, Spotify, will not dominate me on being able to access my y'all got me. That is not me. I am not the one. So it's like, fuck you guys on being the resource that I use to listen to my Marvin, because no. Marvin is very on demand. Whatever the fuck in my library that I want to access in this little 700 song playlist that I've created, no, senor. So I just do believe the next month I have to get back on the premium thing, because I ain't nobody got time to have somebody fucking with their ability to listen to their Marvin when they're on my level. No, and that's probably you guys, I hope. So that's okay. Bypass it. I couldn't even, I got myself so worked up immediately.
real time. You are going to have access to this song on the YouTube channel, okay? Fuck Spotify. You're not going to have to shuffle and be limited on your skips to get to it. You just go listen to it on my channel, okay? I hope you've heard this before. If you have not heard this before, welcome. Well, the fucking come, because this is just really, this is a place, okay? This is 32 episodes into the thing, okay? You can't just be exposed to this the very first, you know what I mean? Okay, this is like some very strong shit right here. You can't start here. But you know, and I didn't even start here. Please, I didn't even start here. I started in the Marvin Gaye Collection. Marvin Gaye Collection does not have this song. And then I went to What's Going On. And then I went to Let's Get It On. And then I Want You. Okay, so that's from the movie Dead Presidents. There's just a scene. It's just a scene. They're at a party and there's somebody is puking their guts out. And he's like, I told y'all little motherfuckers you couldn't drink with me. You know what I'm saying? Like, you gotta build up to this. But you are here now. And like I said, you know, hopefully I'm not exposing you to this for the very first time, but I'm re-exposing it to you. I'm giving you permission to understand that you understand this song the way that you do, okay? Because if you've heard it, you understand this song this way. But I'm giving you permission to understand that you understand this song this way. So, all right, here I go. I am actually going to do this for you guys, and I can't even, I'm already like amped up, like I don't even know where I'm going to be able to pause this at places to come back and start talking to you guys about this, but it's like, okay, just focus, let's just speak to the lyrics, let's just keep it the way we've been doing it. There is so much instrumentation to address as well. This is one of the first we've got to go deep and hardcore into Marvin Gaye groove into this song. So that's where it's like, I just don't know if I'm going to be able to find my words, people, but I'm going to try my hardest. So here we go. Well, friends, that's it for this episode. Did we have fun? I had fun. Subscribe to our show so you never miss the enduring gifts of Marvin Gaye. Follow us on Pinterest, pinterest.com/MarvinGaye_enduring_gifts. There, we are up to 45,000 views per month. I have thousands of images and videos of Marvin. Also, check out the YouTube channel, Marvin Gaye's Enduring Gifts. I'm building the Song of the Day playlist there. It's my ultimate goal to become your free online Marvin Gaye listening resource. So, as always, we really appreciate your listening support. Give us subscribes, give us likes, and thank you for listening.